J1.
Number 20, B.
And then also in the recently, very recently in the National Observer newspaper, it was the October 20th, 1973 edition, there was an article entitled Science and Psychic Power. And here it mentioned that at the Stanford Research Institute in Palo Alto, California, that they're now investigating mind power. And in this article it goes into all the various tests that they are doing just to see how strong the mind is. And also we know that there are just hundreds, it seems like, books that are out on the market today. One just has to go through one of the university bookstores and look through the various books on psychology and the other mind sciences. And you pick up books entitled The Power of Your Subconscious Mind, by Dr. Joseph Murphy, and the book that's been around for a long time, The Power of Positive Thinking, or the one that's really been around for a long time, Psycho-Cybernetics by Maxwell Maltz. Maltz has out other books now on mind techniques, emphasizing the power of mind. But all in all, what the various mental sciences are seeing, the mental sciences such as psychiatry and psychology, they're seeing that a confused mind actually causes sickness, whereas a positive mind causes health. Well, this is just something which Mrs. Eddy discovered in the late 1800s and the early 1900s. She saw at that time that the mind does control the body and that a confused mind causes sickness. And over and over and over and over again in Science and Health, she'll illustrate mortal mind's law of causality. And she'll illustrate it in just these simple ways. First, she'll say in various ways that an irritated mortal thought, second, brings forth physical disturbances in the body, and so third, we feel sick. Or she may say it this way, that we may fear a disease, and our constant fear of that disease actually makes us receptive to the disease, a disease which we think exists independent of our thought. And because we constantly think about this disease and fear it and have our whole consciousness filled with it, we soon feel sick, and we do acquire this disease. Or she may show that we have subjective thoughts of hate. And these various subjective thoughts of hate are soon objectified as being inherent in an enemy. And we soon then feel a type of hateful situation coming about. We actually objectify an enemy, and we're all involved in such hate thoughts. All because we have first subjectively been just filled with thoughts of hate. But when Mrs. Eddy discovered this mortal mind's law of causality, it was actually more or less rejected by classical medicine. But today the various thinkers, as we have seen, agree with Christian Science on the power of mind and its control of the body. But there is an open question here, and it is then, how do we gain abundance? How do we gain health, and how do we gain perfection? And this is where the teachings of Christian Science go a step higher than the teachings in psychiatry or psychology. Mainly the world sciences such as psychology and psychiatry will have a patient improve their confused mental state and gain health by thinking positively. This we know. By reading the books, they'll say that we must always say to ourselves, I'm healthy, my body is healthy, or if we have a feeling of lack, the books will say, constantly say to yourself, I am wealthy. By doing this, they say it is reprogramming your subconscious mind, so your subconscious minds hear those statements of positive statements about health. Not only do they recommend to think positively, but they also recommend taking drugs such as tranquilizers in order for us to relax. Now, in answer to this question, then, how do we gain better health? Christian Science goes higher. And it says to these various medical sciences this. It says, you medical science it will say, you ask the patients to have good, healthy thoughts about their mind. And you ask the patients to have good, healthy thoughts about their matter body. Or to have good, healthy thoughts about their personal egos or about their personal desires and personal opinions. But Christian Science says, can't you see that these mind, matter, and body beliefs are in themselves the root cause of all error and therefore the root cause of all sickness? So Christian Science is unique. It teaches mankind to drop entirely the mortal mind, matter, and body beliefs. Instead of just going on within the realm of mortal mind, matter, and body beliefs and thinking positively about those beliefs, Christian Science says, no, those beliefs are in themselves the root cause of sickness and they must be entirely dropped. So it teaches a whole new system of reference. It says, no, drop the old system of reference and you must come into a whole new way of thinking and a whole new system of reference in order to experience health. And in doing this, it gives the various techniques as we have seen, such as the 8 ordered steps of oneness in order to change our system of reference from the mortal mind, matter, body belief into the system of reference of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And also Christian Science then teaches the specific remedy for health, and that's taught in the scientific law of the Christ, as we've just seen. That scientific law of the Christ, which says, first turn to the Word of God. Understand what mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love is. Second, submit ourselves to the Word of God. In other words, claim what mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love teaches as a truth about our identity and the world's identity. Then it's our divine consciousness or our divine understanding which acts as a saving power and analyzes, uncovers, and annihilates all first-degree false beliefs. And it's therefore this divine consciousness which will then enable us to experience health. So we go on then to the next idea on our list, which characterizes truth, and we come to that of form. And we just then look over what form means to us as an idea of truth. And we see here in a dictionary definition that form means the total structure of something. Therefore, we can just reason with this idea of form in this way. We can say that mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love symbolize the whole truth, or they symbolize the ideal form of reality, or the ideal structure of reality. And our consciousness is in its wholeness, or in its ideal form, if it's always filled with the ideas and truths that mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love are teaching. And in biblical language, the form of truth was symbolized as the garment of truth, just meaning that truth clothes us with the wholeness of health, or truth, or mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love clothes us with the ideal form or the ideal structure of reality. We go on and we come to this idea of voice. Now this one is something that I find to be very warm and quite a nice idea which characterizes truth. And it's this one of voice, and one that we could cultivate an understanding of, I think, a little more. What we see is that the one mind, our mind as truth, is like a still small voice. It is always speaking to us directly. And it's only that we have to be quiet and we can hear our mind speaking directly to us. And if we're very quiet, we know that ideas are constantly coming to us. And I'm sure if we just now in this room just closed our consciousness a little bit and we're a little quiet, we would eventually hear ideas. We do hear our mind speaking to us. But we say, how do we know if the ideas that are coming to us are divine ideas or whether they are just illusions? Well, We know that if our consciousness is so filled with the first degree mortal mind beliefs, that these beliefs are just like a lion roaring. The beliefs are just screaming in our ears, and we can't hear divine ideas because we're just filled with first degree thinking. These were in the realm of what we would say illusions. But if we are looking out from the divine system of reference more and more, we just can trust the fact that the ideas that come to us are specific ideas. The mind is speaking directly to us, and these ideas that are coming to us are ideas that are coming to meet our need and are coming to be adapted to all of our specific situation. So it takes more and more that we just cultivate listening to the voice of truth within us. And also we know that the voice of truth, in its basic form, it's been said that the voice of truth can be found in science and health, because truth in its basic form is contained, as we feel, in science and health. Now, reasoning a little more about the fact of the voice of truth or mind speaking directly to us, we can just go on then to the next idea of revelation. And we have already studied this idea of revelation when we were looking at the laws of truth, and especially at that law of self-revelation. And again, what we saw was that revelation just means direct knowledge from mind itself. It's direct knowledge. It's not knowledge that has been added on step through step-by-step analysis. It's the still small voice which speaks directly to us. So the one mind, or our mind as truth, reveals itself directly through its own inherent law of self-revelation. And we saw as life that life is constantly impelling forth ideas, new ideas. And it's impelling forth these ideas spontaneously, instantaneously, and immediately. Then we saw, when reasoning with truth, that all of a sudden we have sudden revelation or sudden insight. We have the direct appearing of a specific idea to meet a specific situation. This is revelation. It comes just directly. And scientists have more and more been speaking about how their discoveries haven't come so much when they were in their step-by-step reasoning or analysis process. It's more or less has come when they have set aside their work and they have been quiet, and just in a flash an idea has come to them. But it's interesting to note that revelation comes to these scientists, though, when they have been very well cultured and in their subject. The scientist has cultured himself in his subject. He has cultured himself in his fundamentals of the subjects and his principles of his subject. And therefore, he is an open instrument for direct revelation. The moment a right idea comes, he can recognize it and use it. If that same idea came to somebody else who actually wasn't cultured in the sciences and in their principles, they wouldn't know what to do with it, nor would they recognize it. So you see, revelation goes along with a cultured understanding. We must culture ourselves in our fundamentals of, well, mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, and so forth. Our consciousness is cultured in the step-by-step process. When we set this studying aside, and we are then open and transparent for direct revelation, you see, and then we can recognize it as being in tune with reality itself. So this idea of direct revelation and using it, of course, has been around for a long time. This is something which the prophets, how the Bible was written through direct revelation, and Mrs. Eddy also wrote Science and Health through direct revelation. But as Mrs. Eddy said, that God had has graciously been preparing her for years. She was very spiritually minded, and when the revelation came to her that life was in and of spirit, here and now, she could grasp onto it. She could do something with it, you see. Now, Dunui says in his book, Human Destiny, he states very clearly the idea about revelation and reason. He says that two different paths may eventually lead to the comprehension of man. The first, revelation, is a direct road, but is closed to a great many people and independent of rational thought. Those who can make use of it are fortunate. The second, on the contrary, is strictly rational and scientific. And in a very recent edition of the Intellectual Digest, it was November 1973, there was an article appearing entitled Intuition. And in this article it states, there are two ways of knowing. One is rational, the other intuitive. The first, rational, emphasizes the step-by-step process of analysis. The second, the intuitive, is the inspirational leap that enables us to see and understand the whole. Each complements the other, but we in the West have often sacrificed intuition on the altar of scientific rationality. It goes on in this issue of the Intellectual Digest and explores this question of intuition in depth, and it explores intuition from three perspectives. It explores it from the psychological perspective, it explores it from medicine's viewpoint, and then also from the viewpoint of religion. And then again in the Time magazine, April 23, 1973, the Reaching Beyond the Rational article. Amongst other issues, the various world thinkers in this article are discussing their views on scientific rationality and reasoning and intuition or direct knowledge. And in every case, the scientists have seen the need for cultivating now intuition. They see that this is a response where in the Western world we have neglected more or less cultivating intuition, as it mentioned, in pursuit of rationality. So cultivating intuition is something that all of us really must do, because when we do this, we can hear mind speaking directly to us. And this is what we're seeing, that mind actually speaks directly to us through its own laws of self-revelation. And when it speaks, it's always revealing specific creative ideas to us that are meeting our specific situation. And these ideas are always awakening our consciousness to false beliefs. And two, in thinking about it, one says, well, fine, there's direct revelation and it comes from the divine mind. But again, one has to be careful and knows from where the origin of our thoughts, just where the origin of our thoughts are. If our thoughts are in the human system of reference and deep in the human system of reference, then we can be sure that the intuition that comes to us is usually springing from the whole collective unconscious mind. And it's just intuitively throwing forth out of this unconscious mind various false beliefs. So one is very alert and aware of the divine system of reference. Only then can you really tell a specific idea when it comes. And as we've seen through the standard of truth, that we have the divine ideas there as our measuring rods for determining what are ideas and what are illusions. And we go on to the next idea, and that is that of light, or the light of truth. And what we see then is that the divine mind is light itself. It is illumination, it is intelligence, it is information. The divine mind is not only light itself, but it's also the source of light, or the source of illumination, intelligence, or information. So mind as light is expressed, or we can say, or experienced as life, truth, and love. Then in reasoning with our symbols, we can say that the one mind, or our mind as truth, is the clear intelligence, or the light of truth, which speaks directly to us and brings to light instantaneously specific truths. And most specific truths, we can say, are like a ray of light which penetrate clouded consciousness and awaken that clouded consciousness to the specific false beliefs that it has been entertaining. Or with the symbol light, we can say, use it in this way. We can say that there's this idea of the blaze of light, Well, we mean by the blaze of light that the whole, all the ideas of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love are the blaze of light, or they operate as radiance and sunshine, because they are always illuminating our consciousness and solving the mystery of a mortal consciousness. And this blaze of light, or the seven synonymous terms we know, are always opening and uncovering the seven seals of error. And therefore, the seven synonymous terms and their ideas are opening and uncovering the seven root errors. And they're branding these errors as a lie. And we know those seven root errors are just mortal mind, matter, body, the personal lie, death, sickness, and fear. Now, we go on to the next idea of the utilization of truth. And we say, well, just how do ideas brand illusions as being a lie? We say, just what is the utilization of truth? How does truth fulfill a certain purpose? How does truth actually destroy the error in human consciousness? In other words, how does a Christian Science healing operate? Now, what we see that our mind is life is constantly impelling forth ideas. And we see then that as truth, that these ideas come to fulfill a certain purpose. And these new ideas fulfill a certain purpose according to the laws of truth, according to the laws of truth itself, the law of self-affirmation, the self-realization, and so forth. Now what we have seen as those laws of truth are multidimensional laws. They show the translatability of law. Therefore, the law of truth itself states that these new ideas of life are real and they're truth itself. And this law of truth itself is translated, as we have seen, as a law of self-affirmation, self-realization, self-demonstration, self-application, self-revelation, and the self-realization of divine consciousness. Through these laws, the new idea is therefore realized as a specific truth to a specific situation. Then all these laws are translated as a law of translation and self-translation, where this new idea, which has been translated to us as a specific idea, then in turn finds out what the specific areas that we have been entertaining in consciousness. Now, to look closer at this law of translation and retranslation, I'd like to have you turn to your illustrative material entitled The Scientific Translation of Mortal Mind and the Scientific Translation of Mortal Mind. Now, with these two translations, we see that Mrs. Eddy states first the law of translation, or the first translation, the scientific translation of immortal mind. And then she states the law of retranslation, or the second translation, the scientific translation of mortal mind. Now, let's just look a bit closer at the law of translation, or the first translation, or the scientific translation of immortal mind. And here we are just reasoning with the symbols of God, man, and idea, which you can find on the left-hand column on the illustrative material. And first she'll say God, and she defines God as the divine principle, life, truth, love, soul, spirit, mind. So here God is principle, but this is principle in its translating form. And as we know, the first and last synonym reveal the purpose of the sequence of those synonymous terms. Or in other words, the postulate of the first synonym is developed until it reaches its conclusion in the last synonym. So first we have the synonym principle, and the last synonym is mind. What is meant here is that mind, principle, is translated to the point of being a specific idea in mind. So we have the translating form of principle or God. So she states God, or divine principle, life, truth, love, soul, spirit, mind, then meaning the whole of principle. Next we go on to man. And she states man as being God's spiritual idea, individual, perfect, eternal. This means that the whole of principle is translated to the point of being an individual, specific spiritual idea, which is symbolized by the term man. And then we go on to idea, and she states that idea means an image in mind, the immediate object of understanding. So this individual, specific spiritual idea is a translated form of principle. The individual idea is always the whole of principle. It exists as an idea in mind. So that's all that this particular scientific translation of immortal mind is illustrating. It's just showing that when principle, the whole, translates itself as an individual spiritual idea, that this individual spiritual idea always remains the whole of principle. Therefore, man or idea is never a small part of principle, it's always the whole. And this is just where we can see that we've said that we are principle hyphen idea, or that we are principle the whole, infinitely individualized, yet still remaining principle the whole. That's what the scientific translation of immortal mind is illustrating. And it can just mean in a worldly way, if there's an idea such as health in the world, it can just be an idea of health or wholeness. Perhaps it's an idea that one must look out always from structure and see the interrelationship of all things. Well, in the world suddenly has broken in this concept of structure and structural thinking. Well, this doesn't just stay isolated for a few people who've discovered it, but this whole idea of structure is then translated down to a specific individual standpoint, and it can appear as the ideal idea for government. If government then would look out from this idea of structure and always think in terms of the whole and the interrelationship of the parts within the whole, and not think in terms of isolation and fragmentation, then this would bring healthy government. Always that specific idea of structure which applies itself to government always still remains the whole idea that was discovered. So what we see is that through this law of translation of the whole to the specific, the whole never loses any of its wholeness. So this is a big point for us to see. Whenever we meet any idea, whenever we meet anyone who is any man, say, let's say, we are never meeting a part. We are always meeting the whole in a unique expression or unique form of that whole. Now let's go on then to the next translation. We not only have a scientific translation of immortal mind, or the translation of the whole to the specific, but we also have the scientific translation of mortal mind, which we call the second translation. Now, what actually do these two translations mean? We'll just turn to our illustrative material entitled Simultaneous Translation. Now, the fact is, and what's illustrated, is that the first translation, or the scientific translation of immortal mind, is simultaneously bringing about the second translation, or the scientific translation of mortal mind. It means that the moment divine principle translates itself as a specific idea to a specific situation, and the moment we understand that specific idea, at that very moment, our understanding simultaneously analyzes, uncovers, and annihilates any false belief that we have within us. So we have the simultaneous translation of mortal mind happening.